Welcome to the Law and Liberty podcast of the Chalcedon Foundation. My name is Andrea Schwartz, and I'm joined again today by the Vice President of Chalcedon, Martin Celbretti. Welcome, Martin.
Hi, Andrea. How are you doing today?
Good. Well, today we get to talk about Dr. Rushdoony's Chapter 11 in his book, Law and Liberty, and it's entitled Law and Academic Freedom. And he had a lot to say on this subject because he looked at the whole concept of academic freedom rather than a benefit as a means of subversion. Would you kind of explain what he meant by that?
Yes. The premise here is that the scholars in academia, regardless of what institution they belong to, should be totally unrestrained and able to do anything and say anything and teach anything they want without regard to the pre-existing commitment of the institution when it was founded. So it is a right to subvert that is at the heart of this. It's the right to place, as Rushdoony said, revolutionary new ideas in the forefront to abolish older ideas or philosophies or knowledge, to level everything by the sleight of hand use of the term freedom.
Okay, because people today are quick to tell you about their First Amendment rights and they have a freedom of speech. So you don't think, or Rushdoony didn't think, that academic freedom was a free speech issue?
No, it's not. It's actually a control issue from the get-go. And he gives quite a few examples in this particular chapter to support what he's saying.
Okay, so for our listeners who may not be versed in the implications of it, give me an example of academic freedom as it's currently played out today.
Well, today it would be the right on a, say, a Christian university for a professor to denounce the biblical faith, Christian faith, from his pulpit as an academic. And if there's any attempt to pull funding or to remove him or deny him tenure, that is oppressive in the view of the champions of academic freedom. He should be allowed to act like a termite, undermining the entire structure of the institution he was belonging to in the name of academic freedom. So essentially the only freedom is the freedom from Christianity. And the only thing that's really protected is the right to undermine it.
So you're really saying that in all settings, the concept of academic freedom is particularly put in place to undermine biblical faith?
Fundamentally, that is true, because it's never a two-way street. We see protections of atheism, but we don't see anyone defending the right of a professor to promote a Christian position at an atheist institution. It's always a one-way street. If it were otherwise, I suppose we could have an argument, but we don't have an argument because the enemy is the Christian faith, and consequently this plays itself out on the university level.
So when we talk about, for example, private institutions, if we were talking about a Hindu university, for example, and a professor was hired and in the course of teaching his classes, what he was doing was speaking out against the faith of that institution, contrary to the alumni and the donors and everything else, that he would not be able to be stopped because of this doctrine?
If it was treated the same as a Christian university, he would be unstoppable. Yes, he would be able to subvert Hinduism in the name of the supporters of Hinduism.
So is that why we see a silencing of Christian thought and Christian communication in institutions? Because rather than granting academic freedom to professors and instructors at these places, they're basically hit on the head with a violation of the separation of church and state, or church and academia, or church and education?
Well, the problem here is, again, it's a blackballing, if you will, of Christianity that's at the heart of this whole concept. And that is just freighted with implications, no matter how you cut it. You have the situation where there's power at the university level, and they can basically determine what can or cannot be said. We always see seminaries, for example, floating to the left, drifting ever downward into more and more liberal forms, more and more denial of the faith. We cannot seem to hold the line. Why? In the name of academic freedom, we invite subversive teaching in, and it has protected status. But there is no protected status for Orthodox teaching. It's the one thing that is to be undermined in the whole concept of how academia treats this notion of academic freedom. It's a totalitarian concept because it means you cannot set up an institution to propagate the Christian faith. That is fundamentally disallowed under the concept of academic freedom.
When did this concept first surface, and does it have roots in other philosophies?
Well, Rushdoony pinpoints it with the Enlightenment. He actually quotes Columbia Encyclopedia to that effect. And it certainly started at least as early as the Enlightenment and was exemplified in the French Revolution, where the whole concept is that man can, by fiat, make his own world. And therefore, any impediment to that process is a problem. So universities, which were originally set up as Christian institutions, were now taken over by humanists and made vehicles for the propagation of the humanistic faith, which is always revolution on the edge of societal evolution, if you will. And that's where they're always going with it. There's a power structure behind the university system, and it's very good at keeping crackpots out and sustaining the status quo, which is change and evolution in terms of humanistic presuppositions, that man is in charge. And if man is in charge, that means the moment, the existential moment, prevails. And therefore, you have to protect that, and the existential moment always subverts the existing faith once delivered to the saints, as Jude would put it.
You know, it's a very interesting dynamic because you have an institution that is geared and organized and built to, as you put it, to propagate the Christian faith. However, some of those very institutions consider it a feather in their cap if they allow subversion and hostility to exist within their faculty, don't they?
Yes, it's a sign of open-mindedness. We allow the enemies of the faith to be professors here. That's how open-minded we are. But we also have the parallel situation today of the thought police on these same campuses, where students can get in serious trouble for any kind of freedom of thought. So we have extreme regimentation in one area in the student body, and then we have this protection of subversion of all the norms, of the ancient landmarks of our society. On the other hand, why are these two things opposites? Absolutely not. They all tend in the same direction. The subversion is with the intent of totalitarian control from a humanist point of view, and the thought police are there for the same reason. So though they might look like they're hitting opposite polar ends, the mission is identical. It simply takes different forms depending on whose ox is being gored.
Mm-hmm. So it seems to me that if you really wanted to move a society toward socialism, toward totalitarianism, you would be foolish not to try to seize the educational institutions.
Correct. You'd want to do that. There's one of two ways you can do that. You can either destroy the entire existing intelligentsia and the cognoscenti and all the other cute words we use to describe the intellectual elite of a culture, and then replace them with your own, or you capture them in the cause of promoting your viewpoints. Therefore, it's not without cause that Marxism was prevalent on American campuses. You couldn't find it anywhere better supported than on American university campuses, and still to this day, this is the case. They're very doctrinaire in their support of this position, and their freedom to be Marxist is protected.
Don't you think that has an awful lot to do with the fact when people scratch their heads and try to figure out how we possibly could have gotten into the political situations we have in this country? Really, it's a testimony to the flaming success of the public school system K through 12, and then the seizing of the universities by means of academic freedom as people went on to further education.
Correct. Because nowadays, what's important in education is not that repository of knowledge that you can then operate in terms of dominion over God's world with, and I'm talking about dominion, not domination,
right.
Godly dominion under law. instead, we have this, what I call it, the lust for credibility, for credentials in particular, and the universities give you that sheepskin, that degree, and it means that you have that good housekeeping seal of approval, that you've been processed and churned out and have achieved this particular goal, and this is what you have to show for it, this token. It's a lot, I think, like the Wizard of Oz giving out these various things to the lion and the Tin Man and the Scarecrow.
Right.
Here you go. Here's what you have is in terms of a credential. And the credential means something to us. Rushtuni made it very clear that the word credential and credibility come from the word credo, I believe. At the bottom of all credentialism is a faith, a belief. And that's not reposed anymore in God, it's in the institution. Because the institution started way back in the hoary mists of time and then has been elevated to the status of a Harvard or a Yale or an Oxford or a Cambridge. Sorry if I'm leaving any of your alma maters out there in podcast land. But nonetheless, they all seem to be plagued with the same notion that their degree means something. And what does it mean exactly? If you pull the hood up and take a look-see, it's a commitment to humanism. And they have lost all track with their roots. In fact, the universities are now rootless in the true sense of the word. And they see this as a benefit, because now if subversion of prior values is what counts, man evolving to higher levels of social awareness, we end up finally in that Marxist paradise, the workers' paradise. And they don't make any bones about it. That is what they think, that the intellectual elite should be protected and have a protective status that gives them credibility, and it gives them the ability to influence the culture, because then they can set educational policy at lower levels. And therefore, right, academic freedom means the freedom for to have your children indoctrinated in all sorts of things that you would regard as immoral as a Christian parent. Mm-hmm. And yet the academics and the intelligentsia said this must be. These are, for example, mandatory courses your child must take.
Right. And the interesting part is though –
by the way, they must take those courses in the name of freedom.
In the name of freedom, right, right. So when it comes right down to it, we have people – who are quick to criticize present-day politicians, and yet they still value the institutions they've graduated from as if somehow or other a degree from one of those places has anything to do with moral character and integrity, which we see over and over again. It doesn't.
Mm-hmm. We equate the people with the PhDs as those who walk around in the gowns and mortarboards, and who are to be respected inherently. And so we have inculcated in our culture this, again, this tremendous credibility and respect for academic inquiry. But that inquiry is not done in a vacuum. It's either done in the service of man and humanism, or it's done under God and his law. And one propagates a culture of liberty, and the other subverts liberty in the name of false freedoms.
And of course, since the name of this book that we've been discussing is Law and Liberty, which its main thesis is that you can't have liberty without law, once you throw God's law out, once you throw out the absolutes of Scripture and replace it temporarily with the relativism of the totalitarian, what you end up having is no foundation. And so without the foundation, the building won't stand.
Correct.
And I say temporarily because as soon as the totalitarians get in power, then they have absolute doctrine that everybody has to adhere to.
And this lust for credibility is a very important part of this. If the academicians had no public credibility, if they were laughed at like we laugh at certain other sectors of our society and hold them in low esteem, academic freedom would probably not be a big issue. But they've rallied around this as the highest level of human mental activity, the ability for the ivory tower person to freely investigate. And so inquiry that is free of all restraints, including the restraint of God's law and his word, is the highest goal in the system. So we've, again, not subtly, but very profoundly shifted the foundations off of a biblical basis onto a purely humanistic one that's autonomous in the extreme. The autonomy of the individuals at the university level are protected. And a lot of people feel very inadequate to challenge it. Hey, there's a university over there with 900 PhDs, and I'm just a guy with a bachelor's degree or maybe a high school diploma. How am I going to confront all of that? Well, I think Paul has talked to us about this concept of that, you know, we can, in fact, confound the wisdom of the wise, that we can, in fact, bring down the strongholds that are erected against the knowledge of Christ. And, in fact, they're building on sand to begin with.
Right.
So we actually are in a better position anchored on the law of God. As the psalmist said, I understand more than all my teachers combined because I seek your precepts. So if our Christians would be more courageous in terms of this, we could withstand this riptide pulling us away from faithfulness and actually getting us to underwrite our own destruction. Because
right.
if you're compelled to support a professor in your seminary that is destroying the faith of the people, the seminarians there, that is a house divided against itself, and it
right.
cannot stand. In fact, that's the whole point, is a revolutionary intent. We want universities, from a humanistic point of view, to be houses that cannot stand. That allows us to reshuffle the deck again in terms of a new revolutionary paradigm, and it happens over and over again.
Right. Well, this is a quote from the chapter we're discussing. Rushdoony says, "No faith can exist if total right is given to its subversion, and the faith is denied the right to defend itself. The faith attacked by this so-called academic freedom doctrine is Christianity and its concept of absolute truth," which means that when we buy into it, we are basically dishonoring our calling in Christ and not working towards the building of his kingdom.
And I'm afraid that we are not going to be able to urge too many excuses on this front. We knowingly, and Rushdoony gives the example at Emory University, and it can be multiplied university after university, how they all fell, and yet the supporters were pumping the money into the universities, the colleges, the seminaries, the conservatories, all assuming that their dollars were promoting the faith for which that institution had originally been founded, and finding again over and over that all those institutions were on an artificial autopilot. And when push came to shove, that institution, that allegedly Christian university, was not propagating the faith once delivered to the saints, but actually was selling out in terrifically insane ways that just stagger and boggle the mind when you look at some of the things that passes for protection of academic freedom, even in Christian circles. The favor is never returned on the other side.
Oh, never, never.
No, we don't see any academic freedom called for when a creationist stands up and gives a technical dissertation. He's to be shouted down. He's to lose his tenure. There was a call for all these creationist scientists in the past to give up all their PhDs. They should be withdrawn and retracted, revoked, to which some of them said, well, we'd be glad to give up our PhDs if everyone who gained a PhD on some of these frauds like Piltdown Man, et cetera, gave up their PhDs.
Right. Well, of course, it's turnaround is fair play, but there's never that fair play. Well, I observe an unawareness of this fact in the homeschool community when you see parents who are trying so hard as they homeschool their children to be just like the outside school, the day school, that they've kept their children away from. They become so focused on the academic aspect of it so that their children could get into a good college or they'll do well on their SATs and spend a whole lot less time, if any, teaching God's law so that they can reason biblically. And it seems to me, although it's a good idea not to have your children in the state schools because of all the various negatives there are, the primary negative is if you fail to teach God's law to these children.
Very much so. I think Paul put it best when he said, if I had all knowledge so as to understand all mysteries but don't have charity or love, I have nothing. So we need to understand this entire concept of priorities. Knowledge by itself is not helpful. This does not mean that the Christian is opposed to knowledge. If anything, we have the only proper framework in which knowledge is actually coherent and that you can actually build a culture, a civilization on it, won't deteriorate and fall apart. You try to build a society on a Marxist basis, it can fall apart, as Russia, the Soviet Union, I should say, did.
Right, and there's no case ever where Marxism has succeeded. It just gets redefined or blamed on someone else.
And it's held together by spit and glue.
Right. But then, of course, if you have a populace that's more concerned with who's going to win American Idol than they are understanding the roots of their own faith and the doctrines of their own faith, there's really, if you're going to point a figure, we have to point it at ourselves if we don't care enough to do what the Scripture tells us to do.
I live in Texas here, and textbooks are a big deal here in Texas and what appears in them and what doesn't appear in them. And every time there's an issue of biological evolution in a textbook here, it makes all the nation's newspapers about all the rednecks here who want to put in provisos and qualifications in the book about this being a theory or a hypothesis or talking about contrary evidence. There is no academic freedom on this point. It is extremely totalitarian and structured, and they make no bones about it that, in fact, they want to mock and ridicule the creationist position as beneath contempt.
Right.
So it is totalitarian in its orientation. It is, we use the word academic freedom, but it's academic totalitarianism, and until we get that message, you're right, we can definitely be homeschooling our children completely wrong. We could be setting up a secular counterpart that does as much damage as the public schools do because it reposes ultimate authority in man.
Right.
The student might be taught not that they're under God, but rather that they, in their imaginations, count more than the will and word and revealed content of God's justice, which is his law.
Right. For so long, my own children thought that I was just against education. And I was like, no, I'm not against education. I'm very for education. That's why the rigors of what I would put them through and what I expected them to understand, I was against controlled statist education because I could see, aside from what I knew to be true, I could see that the graduates of such places really know how to basically stand in line and do what's politically correct and not rock the boat. Well, what you've just, you know, produced is a bunch of robots.
Correct. And there's a status component in all of this, as you said. Most people cannot conceive of schooling outside of the state running the school, or the universities for that matter. In fact, this is considered such a right, we know that oftentimes there are riots concerning the raising of tuition rates at a state university. Because, again, the state university is an arm of the state and is part of the completion process of polishing our humanists up so they're ready to enter society fully integrated into the social fabric and not prone to question the right of the state to do what it sees fit to do.
Well, we just recently had that in California as students from UC Berkeley decided that the response to the raising of tuition and fees was to walk on a major freeway and stop traffic. Now, meanwhile, they're stopping the traffic of people who are going to work, who are paying the taxes, who have given them what they have already. But as is often the case with Marxist education, they have no idea where the money comes from.
The money just is.
Money is.
Yes.
Money is.
And if it's not, it needs to be extracted from the populace because we owe the students their education.
Absolutely.
And it's in the name of academic freedom that they are to be taught. And I think Rush Tooney hits a very crucial point that academic freedom entails the destruction of freedom because it means you are not free to set up institution that propagates the Christian faith. That institution needs to be subject to subversion, and that subversive core eating it out from the inside, that rot, must be institutionalized, or that institution is maligned and mocked.
Exactly. And I think the burden goes one step further, and I think I'll probably step on toes here, but I don't care. I have to ask the Christian businessmen, those who call themselves believers in Jesus Christ, why they continue to make it a requirement not to look at somebody's qualifications between their character and integrity and do they have a good recommendation from someone who could be trusted, but do they have a degree? I don't have a degree, and I have taught more education majors' children or tutored them in settings then I can put, you know, I can count on my fingers. And they always wanted to know where I got my master's degree. And I said, I don't have a master's degree. As a matter of fact, I don't have a bachelor's degree, but I've never stopped being a student. So why do we
just lost you.
Oh, can you hear me?
Yeah.
Okay. I said, why do you continue to put so much faith on must have a college degree before you hire someone?
It's significant that the last person to chair an entire department at Yale University without a degree was Paul Hindemith, the composer, the German composer, died in 1963. That was the last time that happened. After that, it was credential village all the way down the line. But at one point, it was a meritocracy. Now it's a credentialocracy. It's a whole different ballgame. The credential doesn't mean anything other than in a particularly narrow area, you were able to get your dissertation past the committee's challenges.
Right. So as Rushduni says, academic freedom is, in its truest sense, in the sense you would expect the words to be defined, is to allow a college to be true to its faith. But anybody who promotes so-called academic freedom today are really not interested in freedom. They're interested in producing a slave class. And he finishes the chapter by saying, beware of people who defend it. And I think that's a good warning.
Yes, it's academic enslavement because you are tying yourself to your enemies and they will have the upper hand because their position is protected while the position of the Christian is exposed to a direct attack.
Well, it's certainly sobering and something to think about, and I'm hoping that those who are listening to these podcast recordings that we do on the various chapters will not only really take a look at this book, Law and Liberty, but it's priced inexpensively enough that it can be bought in bulk and distributed to college students and people who are going to have to face the challenges of attempting to maintain their Christian faith as they go into the university setting. And as always, you can get all of our materials at our website, www.calcedonstore.com. Thank you, Martin. I have a feeling we could talk for hours on this subject, but our time is limited, so I guess we'll have to call it a close for this session.
We actually have one more thing I'd like to add.
Sure.
Just to throw a curve in the works here.
Okay.
Calcedon, the website is, as you said, www.calcedon.edu, EDU for education. If we were to apply for that EDU website name today, we would be denied that name. And the conflict, even in the area of academic freedom, extends to the fact that our website is often blackballed and barred and blocked. So people in various corporate settings cannot even get to us. So the battle is actually now extending into cyberspace in ways that I think Rushduni could not have conceived but would not be surprised by.
Right, right. And that should tell people why it's so important to continue to support ministries like the Calcedon Foundation, because we don't compromise and try to be accepted by academia or the intelligentsia or even the politicians. We look at our job as to continue the work of our founder, R.J. Rushduni, in taking the Word of God and helping people apply it to every area of life and thought.
Yes.
All right. Well, see you next time, Martin.
Thank you, Andrea.
All right. Bye-bye.